You're about to hear a recording of a live radio program. It's called Indivisible. You can listen live and call in four nights a week on public radio stations around the country or at indivisibleradio.com. You can also join the conversation with hashtag IndivisibleRadio or leave us a voicemail at indivisibleradio.com. Subscribe now so you don't miss a thing. Okay, here's the show.
This is Indivisible, public radio's national conversation about America in a time of change.
I'm Carrie Miller, and on Thursdays, I'm usually hosting Indivisible from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul, Minnesota. Tonight, I'm here at WNYC in New York. Really appreciate their warm welcome. If you've caught the show, you know that each Thursday, I'm taking a look at different facets of American identity, how who we are and the way we see ourselves is being influenced by our political polarization. Tonight, the modern spirit of resistance that is embedded so deeply in our DNA. And I'm not just talking about the resistance from the left or the Women's March or the demonstrations that have sprung up since President Trump was elected. Remember how Tea Partiers were shouting down members of Congress at town halls in 2009? Remember how they ended the careers of some senior Republican politicians back then? Two guests tonight to talk about what protest in its many different forms, including in art and music, means to our identity as Americans and what it really accomplishes. Do you think it makes fundamental change? Or is it enough that we put the people in power on notice? And I'd like to hear from you on that. If you were a Republican or Libertarian Tea Partier in the Obama days, do you think you made a difference that can still be felt today? Did you change the Republican Party? And if you're marching and resisting now, what do you really want to accomplish, particularly if you're working that activism into your writing or your music, or you're just part of these movements to resist? So I want to hear from you on all elements, all angles of the political spectrum tonight. If you were a Tea Partier, still are, and you were out there at those town halls, and you were resisting President Obama then, but you were also putting the Republican Party on notice, I'd love to hear from you tonight, 844-745-8255. And if you're marching and resisting now, what do you really want to accomplish, especially if you're working that activism into your writing or your music? You can tweet me at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R, hashtag Indivisible Radio, and the phone again, 844-745-8255. Our guest tonight, Amy Allison, is co-director of Democracy in Color, and she's the host of a podcast by the same name. She's the author of She the People, and she's with us from San Francisco. And Amy, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Chastity Brown is a singer-songwriter who's touring this spring and summer around the release of her new album, Silhouette of Sirens. And she's in St. Paul, Minnesota tonight. And Chastity, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you. Good evening.
You know, Amy, I started thinking about where the Tea Party fit into this conversation because it has been noticed that people who are protesting President Trump's policies are using some of the same techniques that the Tea Party established at the beginning of the Obama presidency. And I wonder if you see some commonalities between then and now.
I do. Yeah, I do. I think, just looking at protests in general, from the very beginning of our country, it's helped to shape not only social change, but also political change. And there's a direct line between a bunch of people gathered in a district meeting for a congressperson and the ability of that congressperson to feel good when they go to their district, you know, advocating for a particular point of view in D.C. And I see the effectiveness of people gathering in the district offices similar to the Obama era is what they're doing now. And there is an impact when protesters show up, let's say, in the last month when Congress members were in their home districts and demanding some answers on health care, so much so that they didn't even show up. But that became then the story. And it does have an impact on how those politicians feel about how hard they push for particular laws and practices and policies when they go back to D.C. So I do see the the similarities in some of the tactics. And I also know that larger scale protests that we've seen, and you mentioned the Women's March and the Black Lives Matter protests and others, they're a combination of a bunch of tactics, but those tactics go way back to the beginnings, you know, of our country.
Yeah. You know, Chastity, I wonder if you've noticed that even some of the language, the actual phrases that are being used today are reminiscent of what some of the, you know, again, some of the GOP Tea Partiers who were saying to the Republican Party, "You are not representing us," sounds like. I mean, I'm hearing, "I want to take our country back." It's interesting how it comes up today and it came up then.
I am hearing that a lot, especially with the Democratic Party. I have my own issues with that. I would love to move to like a more mindset of just resetting and cutting off dead limbs that are not even alive rather than taking back. And that seems to be this constant language of this tug of war that we have with these opposing parties, quote unquote. As an artist, obviously, I look at life a little differently, but I feel like part of the dialogue that I try to engage in with people is literally trying to reset instead of let's pull it back, let's push it over, you know. I feel, the language is redundant is what I'm getting at.
What makes you uncomfortable about that language, Chastity?
Well, it's just a continuing rhetoric. And I live here now in Minneapolis, but I grew up in the rural South. And I was just home in Tennessee a few weeks ago. And I find it really surprising the great gaps of difference between the life that we live here in these urban settings versus these rural settings. And this type of language, it takes a great effort to recraft language and to make it something new. But I think that would be really effective rather than constantly instigating this tug of war between educated or non-educated, black and white. I don't know. I would love to hear something new.
Amy, I'll come back to you on that, but I want to grab some calls here to Joe in Connecticut. Hi, Joe. How are you thinking about this? And tell me a little bit about your background, if you will.
My name's Joe. My background politically, I mean, I've been a Republican, I've been a Democrat, I've been, you know, I'm part of the Green Party, I've lobbied for libertarianism, helped get some people on town council in Florida, I think what people fail to realize a lot of the time is that we all are honestly trying to accomplish very similar goals, you know, your screener actually, you know, asked me, like, you know, do I feel that my activism has at times created a polar opposite effect from what I had initially intended? Mm-hmm. And I have to answer yes to that. I think people need to realize that projecting sometimes the most extreme opinions up into the highest offices in government could actually be destructive. You see Citizens United created from people like Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. I mean, Mitch McConnell, his lawsuit, McConnell versus the U.S. government or whatever, McConnell versus the Fed, is what created the Citizens United legislation that ultimately took power away from the people. And he is very heavily supported by, the very far conservatives and the Tea Party.
Let me say this, Joe. I think what you said at the very beginning of the call was interesting, and I'm going to go to Amy on that. Joe said, Amy, there are somewhat similar methods and similar goals. I wonder if you agree with that.
No. I think there can be commonality with protesters, but I think about some of the protests come to mind when little girl Ruby Sales was desegregating schools in the 60s. There were crowds of protesters blocking, holding up signs, trying to stop school segregation. And they couldn't have been further from the people who were protesting for the right to go to different schools, that separate wasn't equal. So though in that historical case, those protesters were fighting for
diametrically opposed visions of what the country is. I mean, part of the reason I don't like that term, and I agree with Chastity, take our country back, is because protest can be reactionary, mm-hmm. back to the way it was at some point in the past, or it can be transformative, trying to bring about a country and a politics that doesn't exist now. And everything from Veterans Day to the actual conception of a weekend, the labor movement's protest brought out, to reproductive rights, all those were tied to, at one point, people having a transformative view of what protests could bring about that didn't exist in the culture and the politics at the time.
It's a really good point. And when you and Chastity, I want to bring you back in on this. When we talk about the historical part of the idea of protest, I really hear what Amy's saying. But when I hear Joe call and say, you know, you can find a common thread between what people were saying in 2009 and what people are saying today about wanting more ownership and more agency in their government, I think he's got a point there. What would you say?
Well, yes, there is a point, except economic activism is different from social activism. You know, I found myself becoming an activist just because of my emotional response to the events, the public murders of Black lives over the past couple years. And obviously, it's been longer than that. But so I think, yeah, maybe there are common things when you displace yourself from your emotional involvement and why you're being active in politics. But the social aspect of it, I think, is like what ends up being my argument when I am speaking to conservative family members or people along the way as I'm on tour across the country. I've had really heated discussions trying to once again, instigate people to think more on that empathetic level, which some people refuse to involve themselves in politics in that way. So, but yet they think that they're involved in that way. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. If you've just tuned in to Indivisible tonight, as you know, on Thursday nights, I talk about identity. And we thought it would be interesting to explore the idea of where protest fits into the American identity. Obviously, a long history of it, but now, I mean, we saw this revived in 2008 and 2009, and now we're seeing different desired outcomes, I guess I would say, but similar methods here in protests today. And I'm asking you to think about, if you were part of those Tea Party protesters then, or you are part of the resistance, the women's marchers, the resistance marchers today, I want to know what your goals were. What are you out to accomplish? What if your voice is heard, but change doesn't come the way you think it should? Think about that. 844-745-8255. Tweet me at Kerry, KerriMPR. And it is hashtag Indivisible Radio. Amy Allison with us. She's co-director of Democracy in Color. And Chastity Brown is with us. She's a singer-songwriter, and she thinks and writes a lot about protest. And off of Twitter here, Danny says, protest is necessary for change. The whole point is to make an issue so loud it becomes impossible to ignore. And to the phones, to Zez in Delaware. Hey, Zez. Hey, thanks so much for waiting. What are you thinking about here?
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm thinking about the question that you asked at the very beginning of the program of, does protest work? Is it effective? And I kind of wanted to respond to that question by talking as someone who's been doing a lot of grassroots activism over the last couple of months and the last couple of years by saying that protest is a lot of different things with a lot of different goals. And to think of it as a single monolith is actually, I think, really risky for folks involved, because it sets a barrier for getting people invested in it. And I think that it's so much more powerful and more effective to instead of thinking of protest as a single form of thing with a single goal that can be achieved or not achieved, to think of a complex set of tactics and a whole lot of different campaigns coming out of a lot of different ways that the world can be envisioned, and to ask questions coming from there.
Wow, that is so well said. Chastity, I want to come to you on this, because as Zez was describing that, I was thinking, you know, you've talked about the personal being political, and you've said just being a person of color, a queer woman of color for that matter, is freaking political. In some ways, it is a form of protest for you to be as open in your art and to make the art that you do. I think Zez is tapping into something there. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with him, and I appreciate him being so specific. What I realized as I was out on tour these past couple years is, as I became more rooted and grounded in my own identity, you know, I'm a 34-year-old biracial woman who just only in the past few years has even seen my face, not my face personally, but more women of color in the media. There's these certain things about my identity that haven't existed, which is why I was curious about the title of this particular show is having protest in our American DNA. I think there's two things there. Is what is it for me to identify as an American versus anyone that's listening to the radio program right now? I have my own identity that is separate based off of my life experiences. And because of that, I started to realize that the personal is political. And what I mean by that is I had actually abstained from public discourse, or, you know, how people say don't talk about politics at the dinner table. Well, now in 2017, that I find that to be absolutely impossible. And I find that to be you're in a position of privilege if you do not feel that it's necessary to talk about the state of America with the people that are close to you. So that's what I mean. The personal is now political.
If you're waiting on the phones, I really want to hear from you. Stay with us. I want to hear from you on Twitter at Carrie, KerriMPR, and you can hashtag Indivisible Radio. Chastity Brown is with us. She's a singer-songwriter. And when we come back from a break, I want to hear, Chastity, if you will, and we'll do this on the other side of this, start thinking about what you want to say about that song, Hey You, because I read some of the things that you said in an interview, and it's very intriguing. So we'll talk about
okay.
that. Amy Allison is with us as well. She's co-director of Democracy in Color, and she's the host of a podcast by the same name, and she is the author of She the People. And our conversation, if you're just getting in on Indivisible tonight, is about the idea that protest is in our American DNA, and protest takes a lot of different forms in art, in actually getting on the street and marching, in putting your members of Congress on notice. So we're talking about all those different forms of protest, and I want to hear from you tonight on this. 844-745-8255. Tweet me at Kerri, KerriMPR, hashtag Indivisible Radio.
Indivisible is supported by Blue Apron, delivering gourmet recipes, pre-selected portions, and fresh ingredients to customers' doors. More at blueapron.com/indivisible.
This is Indivisible, Public Radio's national conversation about America in a time of change.
I'm Carrie Miller, and I'm usually hosting Indivisible from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul, Minnesota. Tonight, I'm at WNYC in New York, and Chastity Brown and Amy Allison are here with me to talk about the idea of protest being in the essence of our American, DNA, our American identity, and the different forms that that takes and what that means to who we see ourselves as Americans. So, Chastity, I talked about that song. Was it called Hey You? Did I have the title right?
Yeah, it's okay. Hey You. It's only on. It's a video that I posted on my Facebook.
Tell me
page.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Tell me a bit about writing that.
Oh goodness. Well, you know, as I said before, like I didn't purposely become an activist. It just there became this necessity to respond, and you know, the song Stevie Wonder's "They Won't Go When I Go" by no means am I equating myself to Stevie Wonder. Please don't misinterpret what I'm saying. But there's a slow, even pace to the message that he's delivering. And I found myself strumming these chords and just wanting to get out my own version of a slow, soulful, even paced stance on my self-love, first of all, which is why I protest. Because I love myself and because I love my community, and that enables me to have the courage to stand up to, you know, regimes like Trump's regime and violence against black bodies. So that's why I wrote this song.
Amy, I think that's interesting. The Chastity says the reason I protest is because I love myself, too, for a lot of reasons. But, I mean, did that catch you? What do you think when you hear that?
I mean, I think we have more tools to be able to not only just express ourselves, but to levy protests in a lot of different ways. And part of that is asserting that we are. I mean, in my research for She the People, I've noticed that women of color, you know, the book is a call for women of color to who come out of movements to go into electoral politics. But many of the protests now are being led or fueled by women of color who bring a kind of intersectional politics that say, you know, I am all of me. Another way of saying is I'm a whole person, in order to recognize all the facets of who I am, a person of color, a woman, LGBT, differently abled, or any of that, you know, speaking a different language, you know, having papers or not having papers, all of those things make up who I am. And for you to recognize me and support me as a human being, it requires a kind of politics for our country, our culture, to support recognizing that. I mean, that's part of the, I think, the power of modern day protests, because just like Chastity was saying, it takes the personal, which is all these identities we all have, multiple identities, and says we are demanding that the change in the country we want to see recognizes all of that. I think that's an evolution. I think women of color have led that way of thinking. But I think all of us in the country benefit, our democracy benefits when we think of the power of protest being rich and having that kind of, you know, vision for the country.
I'm so glad you said that when you did, Amy, because I want to go to Marley now in Kansas City. Marley, you're a high school student, is that right?
Hi, this is me. So I just wanted to add that I'm a high school student here in Kansas City, and as a high school student and not being over the age of 18, I really have no, like, agency to be able to vote yet. So for me, I use social media, and like your guest has said, that they post like their art and like her song on her Facebook. It's the ever-growing social media that we have access to. And so for me, it's really important that I go out and I march and I participate in the Day Without Women's, and I participate in the Day Without Immigrants, even though I'm not an immigrant or I have any people in my family directly. All of my friends, because I come from a very diverse background, they all are impacted by these things, and whether or not I am, I'm still a woman, and so I still have some problems that I have to conquer and I have to overcome. But, like, for me, activism in of itself is, like, as you stated before, through our history. And so when we're told to stop, I just am confused because, like your guest said, I love myself to the point of being active out in the world, and that's why I do my activism. Through debate and other ways like that.
Okay, so Marley, here's what I want to know. I mean, let's say you're you're protesting or you're being active in a cause and you're not seeing immediate change. I mean, how does that feel? That happens to a lot of people who feel pretty strongly about a cause. Then yeah, what happens?
That actually has happened to me before. Like I said, I'm in debate. I ran critical debate, which basically means we critique specific things that are problematic within the system. So, like, this year we talked about feminism and how, like, the debate space was not open for non-masculine performers and how they're constantly demonized by, like, them being non-masculine. And we went to a tournament, and we completely lost every single round because nobody was prepared for that kind of debate. And it was completely devastating, right?
Uh-huh.
But that didn't mean that I stopped because I still have to go out and do things. So while it's still, like, you may have lost the, like, battle, like, I'm still trying to fight the war so that I can win the war so that we're all equal and that we're all happy and, like, content in the world that we live in, which is not done yet. So, like, for me, I don't see immediate outcomes, but like having conversations that are difficult with people so that people can learn and so people can educate and so people can empathize with our like actual themes and our stories is really important to me so that we all can like learn from each other so that we can all be a better people.
Marley, yeah. What year of high school are you in?
I am a senior, so I'm almost done with them. But
feeling like the world's going to be a better place.
Yeah. I was listening to Marley.
Wow. Yeah, Amy. Yeah.
I was going to say, listening to Marley, you give me hope.
I know.
This generation
yes.
has yeah. more nuance. I mean, even I was in speech and debate and forensics in high school, but we never even touched that level of nuance. And so I have so much faith that... this generation coming up looks at protests as form, just an essential form of participating in a democracy. It's speaking out. There's voting, and then there's all the other ways to be part of the society. And anyway, that gives me a lot of hope.
Call here from Fred, listening in Long Island. Hey, Fred. Hi. Thanks so much for waiting.
Oh no, not a problem. I love listening to you guys. I think that protest is. I agree with you guys. Protest is an essential part of the American fabric. The thing that worries me now is that I see that protest seems to be a tool of manipulation as well. Where I think the biggest challenge that I find in protesting is being able to deliver your message in a way that can't be spun in a way that it's not intended. So for what I'll give you an example. I found that right around the election time, it seemed that on the Trump side, there was this push for the silent majority.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was almost this feeling of we want our country back, that sort of thing. And so when there were police shootings of unarmed black men, and there was legitimate, absolutely legitimate rage and just like if you saw somebody just unarmed, just gunned down in the street, you know, there was a reason for people in Black Lives Matter to come about. But when Colin Kaepernick took a knee, it seemed that the right used it as a tool to get, you know, white people in the stands at NBA games all singing the national anthem.
Hmm.
And it almost was like a tool to mobilize them to go out to the polls. Same thing with the Black Lives Matter about all the police shootings. There was constant coverage of a police, another police shooting.
So
after the election.
Yeah. So
how many stories have you seen since?
What's your essential point here, Fred? That the media really drives this.
I think the challenge for when you're protesting is to how do we get our message out? The nectar of what we're actually trying to get out, so that it's not twisted into something else, where
okay.
the result isn't. We're mm-hmm. actually mobilizing Trump people to go to the polls. We're mobilizing white people to go to the polls. Meanwhile, there are a lot of black people who looked at what's going on and saying, oh, my God, there's nothing we can do, and maybe we don't go to the polls. So it was almost like the intention was, in the media coverage, was to embolden people who wanted their country back to say, no, these protesters, no, let's go out to the polls.
Okay, so Fred, hang with me here for a second, because I'll put that to Chastity. What are you hearing there, Chastity?
I disagree in that the whole point of, or one of the things with Black Lives Matter that I feel like is beautiful is that it's decentralized. So there isn't one person dictating the level of people's response and engagement. That is imperative. Furthermore, we know with media, no matter what your you can be as clear and concise as possible, and no matter what, that can be misconstrued. So I think that that can waste. Also, within that, there are strategies that different organizers and activists do implement. But I think just the you know, the particular football player who took a knee, that was once again his, in the facet of your life, how can you respond to politically to what matters to you. That's how he responded politically to what matters to him. So to go and have his public relations people try to artfully craft that in a way that wouldn't be misconstrued, I think is pointless, and it doesn't take advantage of the opportunity of him acting in the moment. I don't think that you can help when things are misconstrued by the media. I think that consistency, however, can debunk their, you know, more conservative views in the way people spin things. I think there is a lot more. I'm trying to say this all in as short as time frame as possible. I think that there's a lot more going on with that agenda and that a mindset of taking America back systematically. That's where the conversation of white privilege has sprung up even more in conversations. It's a very deep issue. It's not a very surface level of just Black Lives Matter. That might have been the precipice or the last thorn in the side. But I don't think that that is what their agenda is in that phrase of taking America back.
Ian says, and I think he's speaking to Marley here, our high school student from Kansas City, the world we live in is not done yet, as Marley said. And Ian says, I hope that woman runs for office. And
oh, yes. Here.
Yeah.
And on Twitter, this election woke the sleeping giants across the country and even the world, as proven in the Netherlands, where they just had an election and the far right candidate did not win. Our tweeter adds, people are awake. And to the phones here to Samantha in North Carolina. Hey, Samantha. Hi.
Hey, can you hear me?
We can. Yeah, it sounds like you've done some marching recently. Is that right?
Yes, I was at the Women's March, and I participate in Black Lives Matter protests. And I'm a college student, and I I'm a co-officer for a club called SAGE, which is Students Advocating for Gender Equality. And so, like, I do a lot of activism with that and a lot of activism. I'm also involved with the Women's Center I go to NC State. and so, like, for me, yeah, it's just, like, even if I don't get to see what I really want happen,
right,
like, with the administration, for me, it's really important that we constantly resist for the next 4 years, and we don't let this be a normal thing. Like, we don't give up, and we are here for each other and caring the whole way and are ready when the 4 years are up.
Yeah. You know, Amy, to take what Samantha said, I know you've been involved in a number of protests, including, weren't you an Army medic, and you were involved in the Camp Casey protests?
Yeah, I was remembering Camp Casey in 2005. You know, people don't remember when George W. Bush was president. The Iraq War was...
They don't remember that?
Yeah. People, if everyone's remembering, there were a lot of protests, and I was part of a Veterans for Peace group that went down to Camp Casey when the president was on vacation. And a couple callers back were like, you know, sometimes a message can get muddled. But the message was, when Cindy Sheehan, she was a military mom, she was a Gold Star mom who'd lost her son. But there were probably 50, family members of military that had been killed or disabled that were down there making a statement about the war. And
It's very powerful. We've never had a president make, you know, right now, like we have right now, that would make fun of a Gold Star family or try to denigrate them. But this is very powerful. And I think in that protest, that was a very direct message against the current war. And I was thinking about a story that I heard at from actually another protest. It's a School of the Americas protest. It's a place in Georgia at Fort Benning.
Right.
And every year, thousands of people go to protest the training of the use of torture and things like that that's trained down there. And there was a guy who was standing with a sign right in front of the Fort Benning fence. And someone walked up to him and said, "Look, why are you holding that sign? You think you're going to change the military? You're going to change the school? What are you doing?" And he said, I don't know if I can change them, but I don't want them to change me. And what Samantha just said about holding a moral vision, it's not just a strategic thing or going against the man. It is holding a moral vision that I find some of the protests are doing right now. And it matters because then we say this is what we stand for as human beings. And maybe that's the commonality. There are certain things that our country should be about. And a lot of the protesters are articulating, you know, love and justice and community and respect. And these are fundamentals in a civic society and in a decent society that I find my heart and love expressed in that powerful and lasting. So anyway, I appreciate what she had to say, because I think that's the potential, the transformative potential of protests that we see now.
Okay, this is good, because I want to ask our listeners here if your protests do not result in the change that you're protesting for, that you want, again, whether it's in art, whether it's in music, whether you're out on the street, whatever your form of protest takes, if you don't see that change, what's the protest for? I want you to think about that and talk to us about it. 844-745-8255. And you can reach me on Twitter. It's at Kerri, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R, as in Minnesota, hashtag Indivisible Radio. And now we have Chastity Brown's Hey You. So let's listen to it.
I was saying something, I was wrong, holding back. What I'm looking for, we could have done this years ago. Pain will take another picture, another time, another stitch, another round that says we keep rolling in. Hey, yo.
Indivisible is supported by Blue Apron, delivering gourmet recipes, pre-selected portions, and fresh ingredients to customers' doors. More at blueapron.com/indivisible.
Guess I'm thinking that you want to be arranging all the lines just to get what you want.
This is Indivisible. The number to call is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255.
I'm Kerri Miller, and on Thursdays I talk about identity and how who we are and what we are and the polarization that we're in the midst of is affecting the way we see ourselves as Americans. Tonight, it's the idea of protest and demonstration, so essential to kind of that DNA of who we are as Americans and all the different forms it takes. And Amy Allison is with us from co-director of Democracy in Color, and Chastity Brown is with us, a singer-songwriter who writes about protest and thinks a lot about these issues. And we've gotten to a place in this conversation where I want to hear from you on whether, if you don't see the change, that whatever kind of protest you're making, whether it's an individual kind of thing, whether it's something in art, whether it's being out there marching, if you don't see that change, what's that for? And I want to go to the phones here, to Luke in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Hi, Luke.
Hey, how's it going?
Going well. What are you thinking about this?
So I think something that's interesting is that a lot of times the way the political situation is that, you know, it's an action. When I vote for somebody else, they're going to represent me. And a lot of times, you know, people go on about their lives. They're busy. They don't have time to get involved with what the specific issues are. But then sometimes things come up and they're, you know, they get enough emotion going. There's enough things that people are care about certain issues that they're going to be more involved with their government than they would otherwise be if everything was just going normally.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's kind of one of the ways that process stems from.
Yeah. Have you been involved in some kind of, you know, whether it's like an individual protest or you've joined demonstrations, Luke?
So I haven't necessarily done demonstrations and stuff, but I've been a little bit politically involved. I'm on the Republican side of things. Mm-hmm. And I've definitely kind of seen the Tea Party movement kind of grow from the right after Obama was elected and kind of moving forward. And I think Trump is the result of the Tea Party movement. And the movement kind of started with Republicans saying we aren't represented by the Republican Party.
Right.
And we want to make sure that our values are being represented. And so there was this protest of Republicans and Democrats alike. And I guess a lot of times people kind of, or at least recently, people have been comparing some of these protests to the Tea Party. And I guess my question is, the difference between those two protests is that I think the protesters aren't dissatisfied enough with their own party for there to be actual change, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Amy, does that make sense to you?
Change happens over time. Right. I was thinking about the Tea Party protest, and of course we had some of it popped up organically, and protests are always speaking truth to power. But to translate that into electoral power, there were like the Koch brothers' money behind organizing Tea Party into electoral strength, and that's not something that current protesters have in their back pocket. But I do think that politics are born out of protests, and not all protests can get to power. That's true, and it does take time. I think about the developments in our society, in our culture, in our politics. Some of it takes generations, but dissatisfaction is an engine of change. Even when, let's say, the people, you know, the Democrats are out of power in the presidency and Congress and 37 state houses, having a very active opposition movement, or what some people call a resistance, will over time have an impact. Because even when the Democrats controlled Congress and the presidency during Obama's first term, that kind of activism was able to create a question in the mind of the public, force people from both parties to really consider going forward. It was able to change what, let's say, healthcare legislation ended up looking like. And I believe the protests now are going to have a similar effect, not just holding, like I was saying, like a moral center, but also being able to actually shape some of the policies that go forward or hold a vision. Here in California, what can't be done at the federal level is being implemented at the state level. Like the state is now passing hurdles to create a sanctuary state set of legislation to protect undocumented. Now that's not going to happen in D.C., but it's happening in the state. And I think those kind of protests embolden people who, even at the different levels, even down ballot, to be able to push forth an agenda. And that's what happened in Texas. Texas as a state played the role that California is now playing during the Trump administration. So we're seeing a connection between these
protests and the actual politics and policies that are passed.
Fanica says on Twitter, I don't imagine he will listen or change. And I think she means the president. But she says protest is about keeping historical record and of responses to it in the moment. End of the phones to Andre in North Carolina. Hey, Andre, hi.
How's it going?
Going well. Glad you heard the show.
My point is this. Thank you very much for having me on. So I want to make sure to say this. I think that in the society that we live in today, we definitely live in an information age. So what's happening is this. You will find a protester for just about any topic at any given time, and a good amount of them, a group of them. So what's going on is this. It is very easy to dismiss a protest because there's always somebody protesting. So, for example, free the prisoners, save the whales, any various thing. And these are important things. I'm not dismissing the fact that they're protesting something that's important, but there's always somebody protesting. So it's easy for somebody to say, they're just a protester, they're a hippie, they believe in one thing and you're labeled as something, therefore I can ignore it and move on.
I don't necessarily need
to respond to it.
Andre, this is a great point. And Chastity, to you, I mean, he's actually kind of talking about protest fatigue, the diminishing of the power of it because so many people are taking up so many different causes. What do you think?
Yeah, one thing I try to, when I talk about political issues at my shows, I leave a moment for the audience to be uncomfortable. And I allow people, hopefully a safe space to sit in discomfort. What I would say to that about protest is that the majority of my protest, again, is in one-on-one conversations. And I see protest not entirely as this massive public engagement. It's these, in my opinion, I just feel that it's important for me to have very personal conversations that are not entirely on social media. I feel like social media is such a great tool, and then it can be, as you said, or as he was saying, you can just, you know, your Twitter feed is inundated with all these different very relevant issues. But again, I feel that there's a tremendous amount of power in shifting. And I love, Amy, what you've been saying, the phrase transformative. I find the most transformative moments happen in a one-on-one conversation. Not all these protests have gained mass and global viewers as some of these, as we've seen with the protest for the pipeline, the No DAPL and Black Lives Matter and the Women's March. Clearly, those were not just overlooked. Those were very global responses.
But Chastity, the pipeline is an excellent example of this because there was a lot of, and I'm not saying it was ineffective. I don't think it was ineffective, but it did not accomplish what the initial goal of it. I think there's other things that it accomplished, but it didn't accomplish that core goal of stopping the pipeline because they're back to construction on it. What do we do with that?
The one thing that I will say is that change does take time. And once again, the pipeline is a deeper, more systematic issue of what America has done to the Native American community. And I think the success of it was, once again, going back to the topic of discussion, is protest in our American DNA? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think it's in your American DNA if you can't, in some sort of way, tie yourself empathetically to someone else's experience. Like the college student was saying a couple phone calls ago, she didn't seem to be directly, like in her own personal family line, experiencing any of these disparities, but yet she empathetically got involved. And I feel like that is one huge thing that happened with the pipeline protest. And I can't say any further. I don't have any definitive authority on that.
Amy,
that was just my view.
Yeah, Amy, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we have to understand that protests aren't about immediacy, but in our culture, there's so much instant gratification that it's hard to remember how long some change has taken. Deep cultural change, deep democracy, expanding who could vote, expanding who has rights, all those things emerged out of protests sometimes over 100 years. So understanding it in that context, it mattered that people protested the pipeline. It mattered that a whole new generation of people had awareness, like Chastity was saying. You know, the caller, I don't know if it was you, Carrie, the caller was talking about protest fatigue. And we've seen that where we turn on the 6 o'clock news and there's a protest about it and something that's happened or an issue. And some people shake their heads and say it'll never change. But the thing is, in a lively, active democracy, and by the way, the U.S., the protest movements in the U.S. aren't even as robust as somewhere like South Korea, where a million people just ousted the president. I mean, regular people just came out and said, okay, no. But it is in a democracy, in a vibrant, civically engaged culture, there are a lot of protests. It's part of how things shape and evolve. And the other alternative is when protest is squelched. So the presence of protest actually means that we're more healthy. A totalitarian government wouldn't permit protest.
Good point.
And as an alternative, I think that's a terrible alternative. So we got to have some institutional memory about how important protests are just in maintaining our democracy and growing our democracy and our form of government.
Mike says on Twitter here, I was living in Wisconsin during 2011 Walker protests and recall. One thing it accomplished, near total polarization, middle ground gone. And to the phones here to Megan in Chicago. Megan, thanks so much for waiting. I know it's been a while. I'm glad you waited. Good to hear what you have to say here.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm just so honored and so thrilled. Thank you so much for having me. Just piggybacking on what's been talked about here, I'm a Chicago public school teacher, So I know what it means to protest and to fight for rights and to keep on going out into the streets over and over again. But I was struck, when you asked your question, I was struck by what I was teaching this week, and that is what was actually mentioned here, the amount of time, almost 100 years, that it took for women going into the streets to get us the right to vote. And thinking about the women who started that protest and started those marches, and they did not see it. They didn't see it happen, but yet they knew. They knew that their daughters or their granddaughters would see it. And just the stamina and this, I guess, the need to put immediate gratification aside and say, we need to keep going. This will eventually create the change that we're hoping that it will create.
All right. Glad you heard the show. Thank you. Emily says on Twitter, protest is a way to send a message to vulnerable communities. I am here and I will stand up for you. Nicely said. And to Dennis in Atlanta. Hi, Dennis. How are you thinking about this tonight?
Hey, how are you doing? I was just on my way home, and I'm listening to it, and I don't think that protest is at the heart of American society and at the fabric of this. Not America as we know now, because we've kind of been changed. It's changed into a very personal me, I place to be. And, you know, it's like people get in and they get what they want and they get out, as opposed to having a goal and a structure. You know, like, it's like if you have a diet plan, a meal plan, and it's to get you a certain goal, you're going to do everything you can. And then once you get to the end goal, then you can give it up, right? Or you can make little changes and compromise. Just little compromises as you get to the big goal. Here we kind of, it's like soon as we reach a peace, a slight victory, we fall back and we let go and people forget about it. And like you say, with the fatigue thing, It's I don't think it's fatigue as much as it's just I just think it's a lack of interest.
Yeah.
You know, we have micro attention spans, so that's my take on it. I don't know. That's just how I feel about it. I could take the if you look at the Keystone thing. What is it? It was a big thing, and then now it's nothing. You know, so they're moving right on through. They've overstepped it. They've gone around it, and I think that we're ultimately we are protesting the wrong things, and we're missing the big picture. Whereas everyone is a million and one different little arguments. I think it's corporate America. It's a big. Elephant in the room that
yeah,
we're
missing. Dennis, I hear that. I want you to hear, Amy, this kind of goes back to what you were saying about holding the moral center. And maybe Dennis didn't hear that. Maybe you'd talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not nothing. I mean, media, if you watch cable news, it makes you forget things happen because it's not in that particular news cycle. But I was just on a Democracy Color podcast interviewing Wendy Carrillo, who's running out of in Southern California, out of the L.A. district she's running for Congress. And she went to those protests and was transformed. She had, for the first time in her life, been in an opportunity to be with, for a couple of weeks, the Native Americans to understand the issue of water. And she's a woman in her 30s. And this continues to be her solidarity with Native communities and environmental issues now is heightened. And if she gets into Congress, she's going to take that with her. So it's not nothing. And I do think that you can look on the news cycle, it looks like people win or they lose. But it's never like that. That instead of thinking of that, think of protests as not only just a way people demand attention, but a way people express hope and a vision that they hold the center, even in the face of some pretty terrible things happening. And I think that will have to continue to be part of our society, not in a way that breaks us down, but a way that builds us up, that allows us in a democracy to see different points of view and to express ourselves and be active. And I think that's the way that we move forward.
Amy, such a pleasure to have you on from San Francisco. Thank you
very much. Thank you.
Chastity, really a pleasure to talk to you from St. Paul. Thank you.
Thanks, Carrie.
Here's a little Chuck D.
Listen, if you're missing y'all, swinging while I'm singing.
Hey!
Giving what you're getting, knowing what I'm knowing, while the black band's sweating in the rhythm I'm rolling. Got to give us what we want. Got to give us what we need. Freedom of death. We got to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
If you like the Indivisible podcast, rate and review it and tell your friends. And thanks for listening.